Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, June 14th, 2019. Coming up this hour,
tensions between the U.S. and Iran escalate.
The Islamic Republic of Iran is responsible for the attacks that occurred in the Gulf of Oman.
Global bonds rally as friction with Iran and China weighs on sentiment.
Chip stocks slump as the trade war hits Broadcom.
President Trump hints at a new role for Sarah Sanders as she announces her departure from the White House.
We can get her to run for the governor of Arkansas.
And Hong Kong braces for more mass protests. I'm John Tucker. Those stories straight ahead.
I'm John Stashower and sports the Toronto Raptors. NBA champions, they won game 6 at Golden State. White Sox came back on the Yankees. Cardinals came back to tie the Mets. They'll finish tonight. Justin Rose leads the U.S. Open.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 1061 Boston. Bloomberg 960 San Francisco. Sirius XM 119. And around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moskow. Bonds are rallying while U.S. futures and European stocks slide this morning. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 7 points this morning. Dow futures down 41. NASDAQ futures down 48. The DAX in Germany is down 0.7%. CAC in Paris down 0.25%. And the FTSE 100 down 0.4%. Nikkei 225 in Japan gained 0.4%, while the Hang Seng in Hong Kong was down about 0.7%. 10-year Treasury up 8/32nds, yield 2.06%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.81%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.5% or 25 cents at $52.03. A barrel. COMEX gold up 1%, up $13.90 at $13.57.50 an ounce. The euro 1.1278 against the dollar. The yen 108.24. Nathan.
Karen, we begin with tensions between the U.S. and Iran escalating after yesterday's attack on two oil tankers.
The Islamic Republic of Iran is responsible for the attacks that occurred in the Gulf of Oman.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announcing the findings, releasing video officials say shows Iran was behind the attack. The Islamic Republic denies involvement. We get more from Bloomberg's Derek Walbank.
Iran's mission to the UN came out, said it categorically rejects what it calls the U.S.'s unfounded claim with regards to these attacks. And that's important here because one of the things that's hardest here is that you don't see all of the evidence that's sort of behind the scenes here. The U.S. isn't quick to put out some things that may or may not still be classified. So it's very, very likely that as we're trying to react to this and traders are trying to price oil and figure out new risk threats, that we're operating in a little bit of an information asymmetry here.
The attack did give a boost to crude prices, with the Strait of Hormuz being the biggest global choke point for oil flows. Dan Brulette is U.S. Deputy Energy Secretary.
Whether Iran is going to continue its malign behavior is really for them to decide. But I can tell you from an oil market perspective, we're less concerned about those activities than we were, say, 20 years ago.
Now, despite yesterday's 2% gain for crude, oil is still heading for a weekly decline. And checking prices now, they are lower on the session, with West Texas Intermediate down 0.5% or 29 cents at $51.98 a barrel. Brent crude down 23 cents at $61.08.
Concerns about the U.S.-China trade war also weighing on oil this week as the White House issues a threat to President Xi Jinping. Economic advisor Larry Kudlow says Beijing will have to face consequences if President Xi refuses an invitation for trade talks. Some Republican lawmakers are also ramping up the rhetoric.
We should not do any business with China. We should not buy anything from China. We have to understand they are our archenemy.
Republican Senator Rick Scott of Florida spoke to Bloomberg from Capitol Hill.
When we do business with China, we're doing business with an adversary. And it's not a slight adversary. They don't believe in human rights. They don't believe in personal freedom. They don't believe in all the things that created this country that we believe in.
According to the White House, President Trump is still waiting for a response from President Xi about meeting to restart negotiations.
Meanwhile, Walmart, Target, and hundreds of other companies are making a plea to the president not to impose additional tariffs. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett reports.
More than 500 companies and 140 groups signed a letter addressed to the president from an umbrella group of trade associations that's pushing back against Trump's trade war. The coalition commissioned a report in February that showed the U.S. trade tariffs and China's retaliation would lead to the loss of more than 2 million American jobs, increased costs for the average American family of four by almost $2,300, and trim U.S. GDP. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Charlie, thank you. In Asia today, concerns about trade were in focus, along with economic data out of China. Bloomberg's Yvonne Mann joins us from Hong Kong with the details. Good morning, Yvonne.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. Mixed session for Asian equities as we deal with opposing forces of the trade war and the prospects of Fed rate cuts. The Nikkei and AXX 200 eked out some gains. Hong Kong still under a bit of pressure amid calls for new protests on Sunday, but sentiment has calmed down a bit with HIBOR rates dropping for the first time in a week. And a mixed set of data out of China, industrial production was the weakest since 2012. Fixed asset investment was also a miss, while retail sales better than expected. China will have to wait until local markets reopen on Monday to react. In Hong Kong, I'm Yvonne Mann, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Yvonne. Now back here in the U.S., Jeffrey Gundlach says there are growing signs of an economic slowdown. The chief investment officer at Double Line Capital thinks the Fed may have to cut interest rates up to four times. We get more from Bloomberg's Danny Berger.
He did up his call for recession. He said 40 to 45% this year, looking out next year, 65%. He also says that the trade war is a big reason why recession odds have increased just so much.
Gundlach likens the trade dispute between Presidents Trump and Xi to an immovable object, meeting an irresistible force.
We're also seeing the trade war weigh on semiconductor stocks this morning. Shares of Micron, NVIDIA, AMD, and Qualcomm are falling in early trading after Broadcom cut its annual sales forecast. Ian King reports from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
They said across the board, their customers are cutting inventory, concerned about what the impact might be on the end markets. Customers include Samsung, include Apple, and also big data center companies such as Google, such as Amazon as well. So obviously this is a very concerning thing for the broader market.
Broadcom cut its revenue projection for this year by $2 billion. Shares fell 8% in late trading.
And in Tokyo, shares of Sony rose 3% after Dan Loeb disclosed a $1.5 billion stake in the company. The activist investor is pushing Sony to make dramatic changes, including a spin-off of its semiconductor business listed in Japan. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. And it's 5:07 on Wall Street. John Tucker has more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Nathan. Hong Kong girding for another mass march against a Chinese-backed extradition bill Sunday, as the city's leader, Carrie Lam, faces new calls to withdraw the legislation. It comes after clashes between protesters and police. The former Hong Kong chief secretary, Anson Chan, spoke to Bloomberg.
What is at issue here is the total lack of trust in the legal and criminal system in the mainland. If this law is passed, no one in Hong Kong will feel safe.
The Civil Human Rights Front, which organized the mass demonstration that drew hundreds of thousands of people into the streets last weekend, has applied for police permission to stage a similar event this weekend. No word on who will replace Sarah Sanders. She's stepping down as the president's spokeswoman. That story in this report from Bloomberg's Ed Baxter.
The end of the month, she says it's been a great honor.
It's one of the greatest jobs I could ever have. I've loved every minute, even the hard minutes. I have loved it. I love the president. I love the team that I've had the opportunity to work for.
She says she's going to spend more time with her family, but the president may have another idea.
Folks, if we can get her to run for the governor of Arkansas, I think she'll do very well. And
I'm trying to get her to do that.
When asked about it, she didn't deny it. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
The 28-year-old Australian man accused of the New Zealand mosque attack smirked as his lawyer entered not guilty pleas to terrorism, murder, and attempted murder charges today before a judge who set his trial for next May. The courtroom was filled with 80 survivors and family members of the 51 who were killed. U.S. prosecutors say the man suspected of shooting retired Boston Red Sox star David Ortiz is wanted on armed robbery and gun charges in New Jersey. Authorities in the Dominican Republic have Rolfi Fiera in custody. They say he's confessed to the shooting. The wife of Ortiz says he remains in guarded condition at a Boston hospital and continues to heal and make progress. Global news 24 hours a day, on air, and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. It is 5:09 on Wall Street, and it's time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashar.
Nathan, a tight game six in the NBA Finals. And in the closing seconds, Toronto led by one. The NBA's best three-point shooter, Steph Curry, had a good look at a shot that would have almost certainly sent the series back to Toronto for game seven. He missed. And the Raptors won 114-110, so the night after a team won the Stanley Cup for the first time ever. First-time winners of the NBA championship. Kawhi Leonard was Finals MVP, as he was 5 years ago with San Antonio. He got hurt, had a messy divorce there. He's glad he ended up north of the border.
A lot of people were doubting me, thought I was either faking an injury or didn't want to play for a team. And that was disappointing to me that was out in the media, because I love the game of basketball. Like I always say, if we're not playing this game, if we're hurt, I mean, you're down. So me just going through that, and I just knew that I have to make myself happy.
Speaking of injuries, they hurt the Warriors. Kevin Durant only played 12 minutes of the series. Klay Thompson missed Game 3 and had to leave last night just as he was having a huge game. He had 30 points in the third quarter. Just as the Mets and Yankees had leads, they disappeared. Mets in the rain in the ninth inning. Cardinals scored twice off Edwin Diaz. The game called due to the rain. 4-4 bottom of the ninth. They'll finish at 6 o'clock tonight before the regularly scheduled game. Yanks had a 4-0 lead at Chicago. White Sox came back to win 5-4. Jay Happ gave up 4, and then Adam Ottavino served up the game-winning homer. Seventh inning, Justin Rose, one-shot lead after the opening round of the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. For the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stanshower. Nathan?
All right, John, thanks. And please join us tonight for the Bloomberg Business of Sports show. We'll speak with Randy Moss. No, not the Hall of Fame wide receiver, the NBC Sports horse racing analyst. We'll talk Triple Crown, as well as the recent wave of horse deaths at Santa Anita in California. That's tonight at 8, tomorrow at 11 a.m., Bloomberg Business of Sports on Bloomberg Radio. You can subscribe to the show, listen to it anytime as a podcast. S&P futures down almost 7 points now. Dow futures down 36. NASDAQ futures down 48 points. 10-year Treasury yield 2.06%. Gold up $13.90 at $13.5760 a troy ounce. This is Bloomberg. It's coming up to 5:12 on Wall Street as we look ahead to the Federal Reserve's next rate decision. We speak with Ellen Zentner, Chief U.S. Economist at Morgan Stanley. Could we get a dovish surprise next week? This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Global bonds are rallying on bets that interest rates will fall as trade frictions jeopardize global economic growth while stocks slide in Europe following a mixed session in Asia. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 6 points, Dow futures down 32, NASDAQ futures down 46. The DAX in Germany is down 0.6%. 10-year Treasury up 8/32, yield 2.06%, yield on the 2-year 1.80%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.5% or 26 cents at $52.02 a barrel. COMEX gold up 1% or $13.10 at $13.5680 an ounce. The euro is at 1.1264 against the dollar. The yen, 108.26. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. John.
And Karen, the U.S. has released a video the Trump administration says captured involvement by an Islamic Revolutionary Guard patrol boat in yesterday's tanker attacks near the Persian Gulf. President Trump says he's encouraging White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders to run for governor when she returns home to Arkansas. And the man accused of the New Zealand mosque attack smirked as his lawyers entered not guilty pleas to terrorism, murder, and attempted murder charges. The Toronto Raptors are the NBA champs. They beat the Warriors last night 114-110. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, John. Thank you. It's 5:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And our guest on this Friday morning, Ellen Zentner, Chief U.S. Economist at Morgan Stanley. As we look ahead to the Fed's next meeting next week, it seems like the market is certainly looking forward to that. Ellen, thanks for being with us here. What do you think are the chances that we get a dovish surprise next week?
Well, I think at this point the market is set up for such a dovish outcome that it's going to be difficult for the Fed to surprise to the dovish side. Certainly, it's going to be easy for them to meet expectations, because expectations is that they leave the door open for a cut should they see, as Clarida has called it, a material weakening in the outlook. And that's exactly the message that they're going to send at the meeting in the statement. And, you know, Powell can certainly give it an even more dovish tone in his Q&A. But, you know, barring delivering an actual cut, you know, I'm not sure it's going to be possible to really surprise the market to the dovish side, just given how expectations are set going into this meeting.
Do you see the Fed going ahead and making a cut next week?
No. I mean, I would put the, you know, the jitters are high. This feels like December, where there was so much volatility after the Fed went into the blackout period in December. Bets were starting to rise that the Fed would cut, and there were cries that the Fed or the Fed should not hike, and there were cries, outcries that they should not hike. And yet they still hiked, because the Fed does not react well to late breaking news. And so if you think about the data that was in hand going into the blackout period, it was data covering the economy through the month of May. On balance, the data was very good. Anything tied to trade was weak, but you look at, you know, consumer financial expectations near record highs, small business optimism index at a 7-month high, low unemployment rate, high wages, you know, you name it. The ISM composite index was up more than a point in May. You know, so just about everything they had in hand said, look, the domestic economy is still strong, but we're mindful of these downside risks from trade. And that's the setup for this meeting. That's what they're going to react to. And so they're open to a cut should there be one that's needed. They're opening that door, but it's not going to come at this meeting. We actually released a data set yesterday covering the month of June, which was quite weak. And there was quite a bit of interest on the back of that. And we saw that it did move markets, which is a very bizarre feeling for an economist, because typically what economists say does not move markets. But it led people, it shows you how on edge they are. It led them to believe that there could be a higher probability of a June cut than people think.
So is it going
to? That's not the case.
Is it going to be a material weakness in the economy caused by trade that leads the Fed to move? Or, I mean, what about inflation? I mean, we've had this low inflationary period for so long here. Could that force the Fed's hand?
Well, I think, you know, if that was going to force the Fed's hand at this point, it would have. You know, they just need to be sure that they stay on the easy side of accommodation. And eventually you do get a tight enough labor market to get a kink in wages that starts to spill over to inflation. That's that nonlinear Phillips curve effect that we've all been talking about. And it's not that the Fed doesn't believe in the Phillips curve. It believes that we're just not in that steep part of it yet, that the labor market simply has more slack in it, which means you can push policy easier for longer in order to encourage that pickup to occur. And that was something that came out of the meeting at the Chicago Fed last week. The labor market panel was specifically showed work done by economists that used alternative measures of labor market tightness that suggested the labor market still has slack to go. So it's still up for debate. But at this point, it works in the Fed's favor in both instances. If they're reacting because of the downside risk from trade, if they're reacting because the data is already weakening, or if they're reacting because inflation is just low and they need to get it higher. Either way, all paths lead to an easier Fed for longer. And so I think that's the setup for this June meeting, is just promising again what they've already done in public, that we're watchful. We're on heightened alert. They take out the word patience. They say that we're basically ready to act should there be material downside risk. And that risk event, you know, could be the outcome from the G20. Let's say it's a bad outcome and you get a market reaction. Let's say that it includes credit. You know, that's what was behind the Fed's pivot in January, was because credit markets were finally dragged into the fray. And you need to react to that. That has a very real effect on the outlook.
Always good to get your insights. Thanks, as always, for being here. Ellen Zentner, Chief U.S. Economist at Morgan Stanley, as we look ahead to the Fed's next rate decision next week. coming up June 18th and 19th. Of course, we're going to have full coverage here throughout next week on Bloomberg Radio. Coming up to 5:25 on Wall Street, straight ahead, we get a check of the markets and, of course, all the latest news in business, economics, and finance. I'm Nathan Hager, and this is Bloomberg. Quick snapshot of the markets right now. S&P futures are down almost 7 points. Dow futures down 34. NASDAQ futures down nearly 49 points. Gold at $1,356.50 an ounce. That's a gain of $12.60.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures and stocks in Europe are falling following a mixed session in Asia as we close out the trading week. Global bonds are rallying on bets that interest rates will fall as trade frictions jeopardize global growth.
And the U.S. is blaming Iran for yesterday's oil tanker attack in the Strait of Hormuz, with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announcing the findings.
This assessment is based on intelligence, the weapons used, the level of expertise needed to execute the operation, recent similar Iranian attacks on shipping, and the fact that no proxy group operating in the area has the resources and proficiency to act with such a high degree of sophistication.
The Islamic Republic denies involvement in the attack, which gave a boost to oil prices, though they're coming off those levels this morning. Bloomberg macro strategist Mark Cudmore.
There's a general belief in oil markets that, yes, we need a little bit of extra risk premium priced in, but there's no reason why this is going to lead to sustained bounce in oil. And that's kind of the general perspective in commodity markets at the moment. It looks like, as long as we don't kind of get a follow-on incident, that we can probably quickly move on from this. But, of course, we need to incorporate slightly higher oil prices into the models.
And checking prices now, NYMEX crude oil is down 0.5% at $52. Brent is down 0.4% at $61.09.
U.S. retail sales probably rebounded in May. Economists forecast an advance of 0.6%. More from Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice.
In April, retail sales fell for the second time in 3 months. May looks to be a different story. Bloomberg Economics sees, quote, a combination of a sharp rise in unit auto sales and solid spending on other discretionary items. Also on today's data calendar, industrial production, business inventories, and the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Vinny, thank you. Shares of Broadcom are down 9% in early trading, the chipmaker cutting its annual sales forecast, saying the trade war between the U.S. and China will wipe out a rebound in orders it had been predicting in the second half of the year.
And Sony shares rose 3% in Tokyo after Dan Loeb disclosed a $1.5 billion stake in the company. The activist investor is pushing Sony to make dramatic changes, including spinning off its semiconductor business.
And futures are lower. S&P futures down 7 points. Dow futures down 34. NASDAQ futures down 50. The DAX in Germany down 0.6%. 10-year Treasury up 9/32. Yield 2.06%. Yield on the 2-year 1.80%. COMEX gold is up 1% or $12.80 at $13.56.50 an ounce. The euro 1.1270 against the dollar. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
All right, thanks, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and we bring in John Tucker to find out what more is happening in the world. John.
And Nathan, let's get more on our top story this morning. Tensions escalating with Iran after the U.S. released a video. It says captured involvement by an Islamic Revolutionary Guard patrol boat in yesterday's attacks. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports this is just the latest development in a relationship that's been increasingly strained since President Trump withdrew from the Iran nuclear agreement.
Even as European allies urged the U.S. not to walk away from the nuclear deal and were left struggling to keep Iran abiding by it, President Trump was content to go it alone last year and reimpose punishing sanctions against Iran unilaterally. As the U.S. turned the screws tighter, tensions in the region rose ever higher, with the U.S. pointing to Iran's alleged pushback as a reason to further isolate Iran, as Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is now arguing.
We call upon all nations threatened by Iran's provocative acts to join us in that endeavor.
Pompeo declared no sanctions justify Iran's decision to lash out. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Shortly after announcing her departure in a tweet, President Trump complimented the outgoing press secretary Sarah Sanders at a White House event late yesterday, saying she's a fine woman, a special person, and also hinting at a possible future run for office.
She's going to be going back to Arkansas with her great family, her husband, who's a fantastic guy, and her family. And I don't know, Phil and folks, if we can get her to run for the governor of Arkansas, I think she'll do very well. And I'm trying to get her to do that.
Sanders maintained the administration's publicly antagonistic approach to reporters and routinely ran afoul of the facts. Hong Kong city leader Carrie Lam is facing new calls to withdraw a China-backed extradition bill after clashes between protesters and police. Jimmy Lay is the founder of Next Digital in the city.
Either she's crazy or she's very evil.
Another mass demonstration is planned for this Sunday. It comes as allies of Lam begin questioning her tactics. Montana Governor Steve Bullock and U.S. Representative Seth Moulton of Massachusetts won't make the roster of 20 Democratic hopefuls who qualified for the party's first presidential debate. The Democratic National Committee used polling and fundraising measures to make the selections. The debates, broken into two nights to handle the large field, are set for June 26th and 27th in Miami. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg Nathan.
All right, John, thanks. It's 5:35 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stanshower.
Nathan, the Toronto Raptors last summer shook up what was an already good team. They made a coaching change, and they traded for Kawhi Leonard, who may only spend one season there, but what a year it was. Leonard, remember, won a Game 7 on a shot at the buzzer, then led the Raptors from 2-0 down to four straight wins over Milwaukee. Last night, they dethroned Golden State.
Cousins inbounds the ball. Curry heaves it at the buzzer. It's no good. Franchise history. League history. The Toronto Raptors are NBA champions. A city, a province, a country celebrates. The NBA championship is due north.
Radio the call. Wild series. The home team won the first game, lost the next five. Another nail biter in game six. Warriors lost Klay Thompson to a knee injury third quarter. Still had a chance right at the end. Steph Curry missed the go-ahead shot, and Toronto won 114-110. Four Raptors scored at least 22 points. Leonard, who was finals MVP, as well as Pascal Siakam, Kyle Lowry, and Fred VanVleet. Thompson scored 30 before going down. Turns out it's a torn ACL. Curry had 21. He shot just 6 of 17. Yankees have lost 7 of the last 10. They blew a 4-0 lead, beaten by the White Sox 5-4 on a Leury Garcia home run 7th inning. Mets had a 4-2 lead in the 9th inning. Cardinals rallied to tie. The game stopped there due to rain. They'll finish it tonight. Good scores. Opening round of the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. None better than Justin Rose's 6-under-65. He leads by one. Second round today. Updates on Bloomberg Radio with the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. The cover is on the U.S. purging Chinese Americans from cancer research. Also in this week's issue, how a new Cold War threatens to create a digital Iron Curtain. Mark Champion wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
You can see in the dynamics of what's happening with Huawei, and particularly with the Americans trying to get allies not to use Huawei, people can see that kind of Cold War separation beginning.
You can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. 5:38 on Wall Street, time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Happy Friday, Ed.
Same to you, Nathan. The deals are getting less sweet for New York City apartment hunters. The share of new leases with concessions like a free month fell in Manhattan, Brooklyn, and Northwest Queens in May. Appraiser Miller Samuel and brokerage Douglas Elliman Real Estate say rents rose in all three boroughs. Thousands of union members crowded around New Jersey's legislative annex Thursday, even spilling out in the street to protest the state Senate president's call to cut some worker benefits. They also expressed support for Governor Phil Murphy's proposal to raise income taxes on people making over $1 million a year. And ExxonMobil is paying $10 million to a Connecticut company for the right to use a technology that uses carbon dioxide to generate power. The agreement comes at a critical time for fuel cell energy. Its market value fell from $1.5 billion in 2000 to about $6 million on Tuesday. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
All right, Ed, thanks. It's 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. Liquor giant Pernod Ricard has agreed to acquire Kentucky's Rabbit Hole Whiskey.
I'm Joan Doniger telling KMOX listeners in St. Louis, Monsanto's owner plans to put nearly $6 billion into weed killer research.
I'm Matt Miller on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We are following the report that UK Tory rivals are joining forces in an attempt to stop the pro-Brexit favorite Boris Johnson from winning the leadership contest.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WCCO in Minneapolis, Target is among hundreds of companies making a plea to President Donald Trump not to impose more tariffs on Chinese goods.
I'm Ed Corey on KFBK in Sacramento. I'm reporting Amazon could account for 37.7% of U.S. online commerce this year.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. S&P futures down 6 points at the moment. Dow futures down 30. NASDAQ futures down 46 points. 10-year up 10/32. The yield 2.05% now. 2-year yield 1.80%. COMEX gold up $13, up nearly 1% at $1,356.70 to the troy ounce. Stay with us. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Coming up to 5:41 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, we check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our global platform for fast commentary and instant analysis of some of this morning's top news. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Kara in Moscow. Global bonds are rallying on bets that interest rates will fall as trade frictions jeopardize global economic growth, while stocks slide in Europe following a mixed session in Asia. Oil declining after yesterday's surge on the heels of a suspected attack on tankers in the Gulf. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 9.5 points. Dow futures down 54. NASDAQ futures down 59. The DAX in Germany's down 0.7%. 10-year Treasury up 10/32. Yield 2.05%. Yield on the 2-year 1.80%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.7% or 36 cents to $51.91 a barrel. COMEX gold up 1% or $13.80 to $13.5740 an ounce. The euro 1.1272 against the dollar. The yen 108.18. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. John.
Hey, good morning, Karen. Hong Kong bracing for another mass march against the China-backed extradition bill Sunday as the city's leader, Carrie Lam, faces new calls to withdraw that legislation. Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the House won't pass legislation to increase the government's borrowing cap until the Trump administration agrees to boost spending limits on domestic programs. And the man accused of killing 51 people at two Christchurch mosques has pleaded not guilty to all charges that have been filed against him. Sports, the Toronto Raptors and NBA champs, they beat the Warriors last night 114-110. Justin Rose is the leader as we enter round two at the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. And in baseball, the Yankees lose the Mets-Cardinals game. That was suspended in the ninth inning, tied at 4. It will be resumed tonight. Other action, the Red Sox win and the Nationals lose. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it's 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. Joining us from our London bureau, as always, Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan, beginning this morning with the latest on the tanker attack in the Gulf of Oman. Of course, we've seen what that did to the oil market in the immediate aftermath. But Leon Denning this morning is taking a look at what that attack means for another fuel that goes through that part of the world.
So he's looking at liquefied natural gas, or LNG. The Middle East accounts for about 29% of global LNG exports, centered around Qatar, Oman, and the UAE. exports from Qatar and the UAE actually have to transit the Strait of Hormuz. That's the choke point near where the two tankers were hit. So in theory, an extended conflict along the lines of the tanker war that we saw in the 1980s could have a really serious impact on the LNG trade. Just over a quarter of all LNG cargoes pass through the Strait of Hormuz, and that's close to the roughly 30% of oil flows that go through the same area.
And Denning points out that this could be another flashpoint for China.
That's exactly right. So for China, rising LNG is a way to curb reliance on coal and its associated pollution. But there's a hitch there. It represents another way of looking at China's energy import independence. China already relies on imports to meet about 70% of its oil demand and 44% of its gas demand. And so the latter, the dependency on gas imports, really looks certain to rise. And the timing there is a bit tricky. For the oil dependency, it's not really as urgent as you might think for China because they've got an enormous strategic reserve. But for gas, the situation of rising imports comes at a time when the political environment is really rather fraught. It's worth mentioning that China has imposed a tariff on U.S. LNG cargoes. So that closes off an important avenue for China to diversify its imports.
So then what happens if China tries to reduce its demand for LNG?
Well, of course, it's going to be good for other potential suppliers, such as those in, projects in Eastern Africa, some in Canada. It makes piped gas from Russia and Central Asia, as well as Russian LNG, look a lot more attractive. But also, it gives a boost to renewable energy. But it's interesting how gas has really become a battleground recently. On Wednesday, President Donald Trump threatened sanctions against Germany over the Nord Stream 2 pipeline because there's a belief that it's going to make Germany overly dependent on Russian gas. But the European Union is going to wonder how much of this is driven by real concern for energy security and how much is driven by potentially a desire to boost U.S. exports.
All right, let's move on to a piece this morning from Ferdinando Giuliano, taking a look at the upcoming changing of the guard at the European Central Bank. It's a race that's already well underway here.
Yeah, that's right. So, even though he's stepping down in October, the names are already swirling around as who will be next. Some of the leading contenders are Bundesbank President Jens Weidmann and Olli Rehn, who's from the Bank of Finland. But the name that Giuliano was looking at is Olivier Blanchard, who is a fellow at the Peterson Institute in Washington and former chief economist at the International Monetary Fund.
Why is Giuliano taking a look at him?
Well, the ECB is at a very difficult time. It's been struggling to hit its inflation target of close to 2%. But there's certainly a lot of skepticism about how many more tools it's got left in its toolbox. And so can the ECB provide effective stimulus, given that rates are already low and it's not clear how much more QE will be effective? So if there needs to be, another macroeconomic intervention, a brain such as that possessed by Olivier Blanchard might be sorely needed. It's worth pointing out also that he's kind of the continuity candidate, because any concerns that people have about a new governor or president, I should say, rowing back on Draghi's key policies, that worry doesn't really seem to apply to Blanchard.
All right, well, brain is one thing, but the big question is, does a figure like Olivier Blanchard have the political skills to lead the ECB?
Well, he was 7 years at the IMF, and so that's not nothing. That's a lot of experience in mediating between very sensitive stakeholders. But another concern might be that he has never headed a central bank, and that's usually a prerequisite for running the ECB. But, as everyone kind of figures out who's the best person to fill Draghi's shoes, there's a lot of other decent candidates out there. Benoît Carré from France is one, but Olivier Blanchard is certainly worth a look.
All right. Bloomberg Opinion Editor Jennifer Ryan, thanks for that look at all those stories. Much appreciated. You can read more from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion or on the Bloomberg Terminal. Type OPIN Go. Karen.
Nathan, thank you. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. It's brought to you by American Arbitration Association. International trade or business dispute, resolved faster with the International Center for Dispute Resolution, the leader in alternative dispute resolution around the world, ICDR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Joan Doniger at the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
The Senate unanimously passed a bill to retool parts of the IRS. Among the changes, modifications to the appeals process and the requirement that the agency submit a customer service strategy to Congress within a year. The House Energy and Commerce Committee wants to hear from six agencies on what they've done to stem the flow of illicit fentanyl into the country. And for the first time, veterans who've waited for more than 2 years to get appeal reviews of their benefits decisions from the Department of Veterans Affairs may sue as a class.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need on one legal research platform. Guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
All right, Joan, thank you. Now we bring you another legal item of interest focusing on the Solicitor General. It's a post often referred to as the 10th Justice because of the Solicitor General's special role as the government's top lawyer at the Supreme Court. And today, that informal title may be truer than it's ever been. We get an explanation from Bloomberg Law editor Kimberly Robinson, who speaks with Bloomberg's June Grosso.
Kimberly, Noel Francisco is the current Solicitor General. Start by explaining a little about the role of the SG, especially with regard to what's called CVSG's short for Call for the Views of the Solicitor General.
Noel Francisco is the former partner at the big law firm of Jones Day, where a lot of Trump administration officials have come from. And as you said, they're really the administration's top lawyer at the U.S. Supreme Court, and they oversee other litigation as it's working its way through the federal courts. Now, as you mentioned, it has a relationship of trust with the Supreme Court. And one of the ways that we see this relationship play out is through these CVSGs, or calls for the views of the Solicitor General. And what will happen in these cases is the justices will ask the Solicitor General and his office to weigh in on whether or not a court should take up a case or whether or not it should let it pass. And we see some remarkable agreement between the justices and the Solicitor General this term when it comes to those suggestions.
You write that the Office of the Solicitor General has an almost perfect record this term when it comes to these recommendations. Tell us about the numbers and how that compares to the prior administration.
Right. Well, we're seeing an increase in these CVSGs, meaning presumably that the court is relying more on the office than it has in previous decades. And so now we get CVSGs about 24 times a term. A lot of them stack up at the end of the term, so about half of the Solicitor General's recommendations are still outstanding. But in 10 of 11 recommendations that the office has made so far this term, the Supreme Court has agreed. But overall, in the 3 years that the administration has been replying to these CVSGs, the administration's been doing very well. It's somewhere in 90%, whereas historically it's been closer to 80%. And under Obama, it reached as low as 65%.
And that's Bloomberg Law editor Kimberly Robinson speaking to June Grosso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. And right now, futures are moving lower. S&P futures down about 9 points. Dow futures down 47. NASDAQ futures are down 56. And COMEX gold is up more than 1% at $13.58 an ounce. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.